Welcome to Association Nation. From digital content to social strategy, print power to video value, engagement to conversion, we cover the content marketing topics that matter most for your members. Today, we're talking about a topic that'll feel familiar if your calendar revolves around annual meetings or conferences. Is your content event ready? If you're an association marketer, your annual meeting is probably highlighted on your digital calendar for months in advance, if not longer. In fact, you may have more than one such event flagged for promotion. The annual meeting, the advocacy conference, or other meetings that serve members by subject matter or discipline. If you have these events on your calendar, what's on your to-do list? If you're going to compete for people's time, not to mention their travel costs, are you ready to go beyond simple landing pages and promotions? This is where content comes into play. There are many opportunities to pique interest and drive attendance with preview-based storytelling. Show members or prospective members what they're missing with live, daily social and digital coverage, and extend the value of your event through follow-up content. It's bigger than a brochure or a registration page. It's really about getting people's attention before an event and then keeping it during and after. Today we're getting some event content smarts from Vera Renke and Jenny Ramos, both from the International Interior Design Association. IIDA's extended event coverage is full of personality and it's a model worth examining. Jenny, let's start with you. You're holding upwards of 100 events per year, so can you give our listeners a sense of how you prioritize what you cover, especially with big events like NeoCon?
Absolutely. We are very selective in how we do our live events, and when we do our live events, we want to make sure that the quality of the video and the audio is both there. So we do, I'd say, probably a handful of live events a year, and our biggest one is our annual business meeting, and it's very much a orchestrated event. We've got different cameras, angles, there's a mixer, and it's very much an elaborate setup for a Facebook Live, but it also allows our members to engage from a distance and to see what is being talked about and to honor our winners of our Star and Titan and of the Year awards. It's a great opportunity for people who can't make it to NeoCon for them to be able to see it from a distance.
And so you're running that as a Facebook Live event?
We are.
Have you always done that?
Last year we did it Facebook Live and on YouTube, and then the year before we just did YouTube. YouTube has not been as successful, but last year Facebook Live was just announced and it was something we decided to try, and it actually worked out really well because mm-hmm. people would weigh in, they would make comments, they would lots of thumbs up and hearts.
Which that was surprising to me again because we've always had it on YouTube. I don't know how many years it has been on YouTube, but with our following, we have about over 250,000 followers on Facebook.
So tell me a little bit about how you approach NeoCon, even from a tactical standpoint. Like, how many staff members do you have helping with social content creation?
I think we've been very successful with NeoCon being like our biggest event, and just so much goes into planning it. And the more that we plan ahead and the more that we can pre-schedule, the easier it is. And this year we're doing something a little bit different with our takeovers. We're having members take over our Instagram, but we're gonna have control of our Instagram stories. So even though the member is going to be experiencing a day of NeoCon and sharing that on Instagram, we're gonna be able to share from the headquarters point of view on Instagram stories.
It's very experimental. It's very new for us within the past couple years because we've never done anything like this before. It's always been very curated content. We've never done anything organic. So I feel like it is a constant testing ground.
That's interesting to hear that because we interviewed some of our own staff at Imagination about a program that we do for Project Management Institute's live event coverage. And it's the same, you know, the same exact themes are kind of coming through. Lots of testing, lots of, you know, trial and error and kind of bubbling up to the top what is most successful and continuing with those things. And some things kind of stay in the social media graveyard where they probably belong. Yeah. So speaking of the social media graveyard, I know that you were active on Snapchat at a point, and I know you're talking a lot about Instagram stories and how you're becoming more active on Instagram stories for your live events.
Have you shifted focus towards Instagram stories? Are you still doing both?
We've shifted.
Yeah.
We realized with Snapchat, the thing that kind of sucks about Snapchat, and I don't mean to put them down, but I think especially for people who want to collect analytics and data, it's so hard. You don't know who is following you, and it's hard to get deep data on who your demographic is and exactly how many people viewed your stuff. I just discovered that there are analytics for Instagram stories built in the Instagram app now, which is fantastic because I can actually see how many people have viewed it, how many people have exited a story, how many people stopped viewing a story. We also realized, though, that a lot of our industry members are on Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, it's a natural fit because
exactly.
of the visual nature of your content.
Right. In addition to your visual content, I definitely say your CEO, Cheryl Durst, has quite the social presence, too.
Yes.
So how do you capture, you know, the magic and essence that is Cheryl and use that as ammo in your program?
I think it's interesting because Cheryl adds a personality to IIDA. But then headquarters, we kind of run, I wouldn't say necessarily separately, but we kind of stick to our main agenda and focus of like our events and different content that we need to share. And then Cheryl has her different her own perspective. So I think it lends to kind of the thought leadership side, which is Cheryl and her observations. And then you have headquarters where we're able to deliver content and information from a different perspective for interior design.
So in your dream world, with unlimited resources and funds, what would you want to do for event coverage or any kind of conference coverage that you aren't doing now?
So we were talking about this yesterday. Honestly, mine is pretty simple, and it goes back to Cheryl. Because she is such a face of IIDA and she is so charismatic, I would love for her to do like a personal Instagram live or Facebook live on our HQ feed. She takes us with her to Milan, or she takes us with her to, you know, name your country or chapter. Because quite honestly, she brings in a lot more engagement than in some ways I think like our own HQ account does. And it is because it's so personal, and it is because, you know, she just has such a voice. But there are times where she, you know, she'll take pictures from Design Week in Milan, and it looked amazing and it looked awesome. And I'd be like, oh my God, wouldn't it be great if she just could sort of like record what she was doing, give almost like vlogging in a sense. I would really like to see something like that.
The story seems more personal when someone's telling you about something that they're experiencing versus like a panel discussion where you're kind of a fly on the wall at a panel discussion and you're almost just like this external observer and the conversation's not directed at you because it's directed at the media audience. So I feel like there's a very big difference between how we do our live feed for our annual business meeting and then how like Cheryl adding a personal touch to it I think would mean more and just be more of an more interesting content.
So clone Cheryl. Is
yes,
what we're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So she could be all places at all times.
I'd like three of her, please.
That would be great. You have a lot of global events that are happening throughout the year. Are you targeting them toward a global audience, or are you targeting them towards a United States audience? And how do you, if you're covering an event in Barcelona, how does that differ than if you're covering an event in Los Angeles?
I think actually the timing of it works well because we don't work 24 hours a day at headquarters. We do work an 8-hour day. So when our staff is in Europe at a Milan or Paris show, the information that we get is available to us usually first thing in the morning. So then we're able to share that pretty immediate. And then being in the central time zone, that bodes well with the East Coast and the West Coast. But then it also translates well into the next day for Asia or for Europe as well, because it's more like the evening or first thing the next morning for them.
So if you had one piece of advice for an organization that hasn't dip their toe into the waters of social coverage for their events, what would your piece of advice be?
I feel like we've been saying this word a lot, experiment. And that's something that we stress to our members when we do social media informational talks for them, because they want to know, what can I do? I get emails a lot, actually, from members who are like, I want to do this event, or I want to increase our social media reach for our chapter. How do I do that? When I read their questions, they're specifically looking for rules. And I have to tell them there are, you know, there's a set of guidelines that you can Google online on how to do social media for a brand. But it really is a lot of experimenting and looking at your own analytics. So it's not one size fits all. I started in the role. It was just, here's an idea. Let's kind of roll with it and see what happens. And we'll look at our analytics and see if this is something that we want to continue doing or if it's something that we want to kill, for lack of a better word. But I would say to be experimental and to not be afraid to just go balls out. Oh, sorry.
That was actually awesome.
Can you keep that?
Vera, any last words of advice?
I think engagement is something that's very important for people to not only engage with their organization's brand, but in their own personal life and engaging with different organizations and understanding and learning from other companies and other industry members and even individuals and thought leaders. Once you understand how a program or a software works for your own personal benefit, I think you can also translate those lessons learned into your professional brand.
So we are here today with Cindy Miller, Imagination's VP of Content and resident makeup lover and fashionista. And we're here to talk about PMI. So Imagination has really had a long-standing relationship with PMI. We've been with them for over 15 years. You know, it started with PM Network magazine, and now it's a large-scale content program that includes social content, career-focused content, a blog, a video program. The list, you know, goes on, and new things are introduced each year. So how did live event coverage come about in the scheme of things?
I'd love to say it was some big strategic plan that we really gave a great deal of thought to. But it really started with one team member just using her personal Twitter handle to get some word out about the conference and what was happening, some of the more exciting speakers. And then it really did blossom from there. We did actually sit down and hash out a strategy. What should this look like? What are our goals? What, you know, how did we want to position this kind of event to make it seem like something that people would really want to go to and were missing out on the action if they didn't go to? Along with the social, we have the blog. And that actually started at an event as well. It was designed as a one-off. It was for a research conference in Warsaw. So we packed up the team and went to Warsaw and started writing blog posts from there. And it proved to be so popular that it actually got extended out to a full blog, which now features contributions from 15 project managers around the world. And I write the event coverage for each event. So we'll probably typically do 3 or 4 blog posts from each event.
I think though that's kind of proof that, you know, you can learn from those small lessons and small tests. So you can do that on a smaller scale. But from Imagination standpoint, how many people do you bring when you go to these conferences? And then how does the content at that you're creating complement the content that PMI is creating on the ground as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we keep it pretty lean and mean. Sometimes there's only 2 of us. So we really just drink a lot of coffee and make sure we know where the coffee stand is.
Do you ever sleep with 2 people there?
Sometimes, yes. We block out periods where we can get some sleep in. But they can be long days. You know, we'll start in the morning with just sort of a look at the schedule, who's going to do what kind of speakers we have, you know, if we're going to be using Twitter, what their handles are, same for Instagram, lining up all that stuff. I mean, it really is like old school journalism. It's like covering a fire. You go there, you talk to people, you're trying to get it out quickly, but also in a really cool and interesting way. We operate like the media. You know, we report the facts, and then that hopefully, if we've done our job right, that fuels the interest and the interactions from the other people who are on those social channels.
And how do you engage and respond to other people on social channels?
Sure. Some of the tweets from us and attendees are retweeted from the main PMI handle, and then we also retweet some from the blog handle. We also get a fair amount of commenting on the blog as well. And I think that's a really great example of how adjusting and morphing as we've covered these events has really paid off. One thing that's changed that we picked up on from the reader interaction was that people wanted more of a personal flavor to it. If they were there, they were getting the information. If they weren't there, then just a straight recap probably wasn't that very interesting to them. So a couple of years ago, we took a pretty drastic turn into the personal. You know, we went from saying, this is what happened at Congress today, into, hey, this is what this keynoter said. I think it's kind of interesting. What do you guys think? And then also just really bringing in a personal touch. Like, I'm a pop culture junkie, so I would bring in references to Kanye or how I was going to go shopping for my Gucci bag after this event. So I think by doing that, you can make it more personal, so it doesn't seem like it's like a chore to read it.
Yeah, and it makes your organization seem more human, yes. Which I think many organizations struggle with finding their voice.
Yeah, for sure.
One example that I think does an organization that does this really well is ASAE. They have Ernie Smith as their voice on social, and he is kind of the face of ASAE on social.
Yeah, I think another person who does that really well is Cheryl Durst from the International Interior Design Association. She, you know, if you go on her Instagram feed, you'll see things promoting their NeoCon event and everything, but you'll also see some posts about her shoes and what she's wearing that day.
Do you have an interest in fashion? I couldn't tell.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, no, she is. She's a really good example of that, and she has a great and very interesting social feed.
Yes.
So just to back up a little bit, because Imagination is there, and they are really covering it from a neutral angle, and they're almost operating as press. So when you're talking to attendees, they're not talking to people who work for, PMI corporate. They are talking to someone who's a journalist who's really interested in their viewpoints from a journalistic angle. And I think that makes a difference when people are thinking about maybe how honest they might be.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful, because you get a person's real opinion on whether they thought a keynoter was great or not. And whether they're getting the networking that they want to get from that. So, yeah, and I will say that people are really open to talking to us. I'm always surprised because, we're going up to them during what they see as a networking time, and they're fine with it. They'll answer our questions and, are absolutely delightful about it.
So you do this multiple times a year, I know, and in multiple places throughout the world. When you are preparing for the event, where do you start?
We typically do three big events, one in Europe, and then the other two are typically in North America. It sounds really super basic, but do your homework. You've got to research the keynoters, you've got to create a list of relevant hashtags, handles, maybe even get stock images of some of the more popular topics that you're going to be talking about, or the speakers themselves. Sometimes it helps to create graphic templates that you can use on the fly. And I think the other thing, again, sounds really basic, but really figure out who's going to do what. Because the only way this can work is if you know who precisely is going to be taking notes for the longer form feature, who's going to be taking the actual pictures that you'll use on Instagram or Twitter or whatever.
Walk us through the different tactics people should use at different stages in the process, before an event, during an event, and after. Are there certain channels or content types that work well at different times?
Before the event, you can take two approaches. You can tap into existing content that you already have to promote the event, or you can create content to promote the event. During the actual event, Twitter rules, because basically you can use it as a newsfeed. And you can load it up with anything from, retweet if you agree, to a picture, to anything. Especially if you have a dedicated handle for events, that really is the that's the fire hose. you can just get your message out there. Instagram is really great, and we've been using that quite a bit more with PMI for capturing the vibe. Like, what are people doing? That's, to me, it's more of like, what are the attendees getting out of this event? I think blogging helps put the day's event in some sort of context. To me, the blog is a thought leadership piece. That's where you're really going to get people talking about, you know, what that speaker said or what your blog post is about. We've had a lot of good keynoters at PMI events that say things that people agree with and disagree with. So that's, to me, a really great way to position PMI as a leader, not only in project management, but in the business world as a whole. Yeah, exactly. They want to be there. And we've had comments on social and on the blog that, you know, that people feel like they're missing out or they're really bummed. So thank you that we've provided this information for them. So I think in that way, it not only builds interest in the event, but it builds interest in the association itself. I think a really great example that people can draw from, you know, the outside world is New York Fashion Week and London Fashion Week. Those fashion councils and the new business development groups have done such a great job of turning what was once this sort of very insular, very highbrow event into something that everybody now is a part of. You know, they've created something that is part of the cultural mainstream without losing that cachet, which yep. I think is amazing. I mean, I think not everybody has Gigi Hadid tweeting about their events, and that's a challenge. But I think just taking that lesson learned of like getting your message out there and making it cool and making it accessible in a way, in a different way, is really something that associations can latch on to.
If you dread adding one more item to your event to-do list, remember the PMI story. They started with some basic social coverage, saw what was working, and have expanded greatly from there. The message, you can start small. Small doesn't mean siloed, though. Does your association have a separate team that works on events? Make sure you're not just communicating with them, but also collaborating with them on creative ideas. For example, see if you can get a Q&A with that well-known keynote speaker and use it as a teaser story before the conference. Figure out what sessions might be ideal to highlight through live social sharing. Chances are there are also opportunities to feature content through whatever tech is being used at your conference. Got an app to help members navigate and find sessions? Ask about ways to send daily stories or content digests to app users. Perhaps most important, remember that great conference content has a longer lifespan than just the conference itself. Content marketing can help you extend the life of your event from long before the opening session to long after the flight home. Okay, Association Nation, let's put a bow on this episode with my favorite exercise, I Like, I Wish. I like that organizations are starting to recognize that conferences are full of thought leadership value and that they're finding new exciting ways to extend the shelf life of events through content. I wish more associations would build a solid strategy for their on-site coverage and not treat it as an afterthought. Hopefully, we've given you some tips and examples to help you do that today. Thanks for joining us for our episode on content for events. Let us know what you think at podcast@imaginepub.com, and be sure to subscribe using your favorite podcast app to get future episodes. Up next month, we'll be talking about email. It's still the workhorse of the web, but are you putting it to work?